Rebecca.
The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arts Complex and 24-hour service station, Letterkenny.
Welcome, one and all, to the DL Debate. A great show in line for you this evening with arguably the greatest Gaelic footballer that has ever played the game, Éirigh Ó Cadhain, and Tyrone's Peter Canavan, hearing his story and life now behind the camera and coaching and whatever else he's up to. But first of all, a lot of people says it wouldn't happen. There's going to be no football this year. There's a lot of doom and gloom, but I thought if things went correct, why wouldn't there be some GAA club and county? And thankfully on the line now I have Ed Byrne to clear up all the confusion and give us this roadmap back to football action. Ed, how are you?
Not so bad, Brendan. Yourself?
I'm keeping well, Ed. I'm keeping well. Listen, Ed, I'm buoyant and in good mood because we finally got some football on the horizon to get us all back out doing what we love best, going watching and enjoying and playing Gaelic games. And Ed, you've come up with a format for our championship between the senior, intermediate, junior and the hurling, of course. And Ed, you decided to go with a new format. Why was that?
I suppose two reasons, and you hit one, the nail on the head with one of them, was we want to get back out and we want to see games being played, and there's nothing people love more than championship, the rivalry and the intensity of that football. And the second reason, of course, is we all know since lockdown, quite a lot of clubs have been unable to take part in any fundraising activities or do any fundraising activities. While some may have lost one line, a lot of the fundraising activities have been lost. And for the clubs, one of the things that helps the fundraising in the club is a championship game. So if we'd go with the old format, we would have seen 50% of our clubs only have one championship game at home. So the idea was to provide at least one more. And I won't say we're very restricted in the time frame we have, but we were restricted in what we'd like to put together. And we felt that two home games and two away games to each club was a fair and a balanced sort of a draw this year, you know. So that's why we went with it.
Yeah. And Ed, funny, the last time you were on episode 9, we're now up to 18. We've got a rhythm going here, Ed. And the big thing we talked about the last day was fixtures and club finances and how difficult it was and the strain that was on clubs. And we're right in the mix of this now, Ed. And I suppose it shouldn't be forgotten that all these clubs have had to survive now without some income coming in and have kept things going, and now they've got to get back on their feet. So there has to be a big centre around every parish and every club pulling together now, and that's what you're attempting to do to get this championship so it's an even championship. We also have them home gates, which is vital. Yeah, just so there's two pools. Is it a draw every week then for who is home and who meets
who? We'll probably start with Brendan, all 16 into the pot, and we'll do two rounds at the beginning. We had initially thought just one draw and then one later on, but actually some of the hopes that we would have would be that maybe RTE and TG Cahir, who are interested in running with club games this year, we may be able to get some of our games. We hope that we'll be in a position to say, well, look, here's some of our games, are you interested in showing them? Because bear in mind, at the very beginning, we're limited to 500 people in the grounds of our championship, and some championship gates are way over that, but this is what we're being told, that only 500 people. And that's going to create its own problems. So the idea behind the two rounds being drawn first was that we may be able to try and encourage one of those broadcasters or possibly clubs to be in a position to stream games so that people who can't attend or may not wish to attend because they are still cocooning or whatever, are able to see the games. That was the idea behind going to two rounds. Basically, for the draw itself, 16 clubs into a pot. You pull out 8 names. That's Group A, and they are at home in week one. And then Group B will be away, and then in week two, they will be the home teams. Now, the one thing you will know is that the 8 teams in Group A will not play each other in the group stages. The teams in Group B will not play each other, obviously, in group stages. You pull from Pot A, and whatever team that they've played in week one will be removed from the pot for week two, and they can play any of the other six teams. So every club that's in Group A, the only thing they will know at the start of the championship is that they can play any team in Group B. And then as you progress further along, it's the same thing. You can play any of the teams in the opposite group, but you will only play them once.
It just matters. It just depends if it's home or away, which is going to be the exciting part of the draw.
Yeah.
And Dad, see the 500 person thing at the game. Is that something that can change down the line, or is that set in stone now?
I think the restrictions are still made by the HSE, and we're governed by them. I think it's 200 as we start off our league games, and that it's only 200 can attend. And from what we've been told, our county secretary was informed last week that included players as well. So that is going to cause, I suppose, teething difficulties for clubs to see how we can manage the 200 in. But by the time our championship comes around, thankfully, it is up to 500 people. And, look, that's why we would hope to be in a position to get the broadcasters to put on some of our games. Look, we can't say they'll do it with all, obviously. They mightn't do it with any. And we will have to look at maybe streaming or something, or speaking to clubs. But again, we're restricted on streaming, that we can't clash with any games the broadcasters have on. So timing could be a bit unusual in championship games if we feel that clubs would be able to stream a game, you know. So all that is being looked at and will be throughout the championship. But the idea of the draw, to be perfectly honest, was to keep a bit of excitement going throughout the championship. And by the second week, at the final game, or maybe it'll be a Monday morning, but the draw will then take place for round three. And at that stage, the clubs who have completed round one and two still won't know who they're playing the following week. And I know some clubs will be saying, well, we want to know because we want to prepare. You and I know, Brendan, there's plenty of statsmen out there, and very good statsmen don't need more than 3 days to have their stats in, and that should be ready for a Thursday night for club training.
The statsmen will be all right. We'll not worry about them, Ed. Ed, I think the draw thing's a great idea, because same as that, with teams not knowing where they're going to be and at what point, I suppose, we know that the larger powers out there are going to meet each other and where this is going to be. I think that's right. That'll keep a lot of keen interest. And rather than it being mapped out and teams maybe really saying, right, that's a game we need to win at home, this is the game we're pinpointing away, teams aren't going to know, and it's going to keep things fresh. It goes to quarterfinal stage then, and of course it's just one side that's going to get relegated from the championship down to intermediate. Yeah, who do you think that might be at this point?
Who do I think is going to be relegated?
Yeah, I'm only winding you up in that.
I know who I would like, but I best not say it.
I put you on the spot there. Well, listen, I think that's a fair play just for coming up and waiting. And I know a lot of people were out about earlier in the championship, but I mean, it wasn't about that. I know people were, I suppose, just hanging on any bit of information. Now, there was all sorts going about. I think that's a fair way of doing it. Now, county players, obviously, Ed, are with their clubs. And that's the big thing here, that they're not going to get pulled on by saying, listen, we need you here, we need you there. They're going to be with their clubs. So again, something that's going to be unusual for the clubs to have their full complement there. I think that's going to add another, a nice input into this that we haven't seen for years with county players, obviously being very restricted.
Yeah. Look, you're going to see maybe in our leagues where you're going to have round one and two, possibly three rounds of the league before the championship. And at that stage, you know, we're going into championship then. Round four is between quarterfinals and semifinals. And look, at that stage, we have a gap between our group stages and our quarterfinals, and we have put in a divisional thing there. We expect in most instances that county players will be rested at that stage. they are going to be preparing for a National League, two National League games and a knockout championship. So, I mean, there is a rest period there. And while we would love to have, for the divisional or these regional games, while we'd love to have everyone in their full complement of all other players, we have to be realistic too, that if we were running our normal leagues and our championship in a normal year, we've only 7 rounds of a league this year, okay? And then we've obviously quarterfinals and semi. But one of the things is, in a normal year, we've 18 rounds. And the club player and the county player generally play in April 5 to 6 games. So roughly a third of our games are played with county players. And actually, in this format, a third of our games will be played with county players at the beginning. Now, I know that then moves on to quarterfinals and that, but it was rather than just end, as there's no promotion and relegation, we felt we needed to give something at the end of the leagues for clubs. And to continue football, because bear in mind, as you said at the beginning, a couple of months ago and a couple of weeks ago, the possibility of playing any football or any hurling of any description was being taken from us. We were being told it wasn't likely to happen with social distancing. So I personally am very grateful that we're going to be back on the field of play. And what we've tried to do here is provide as many meaningful games at the very beginning, because who knows what winter will bring. And I'm not predicting a return of the virus, but if that is to come later in the winter, we would hope our championships will be finished, both in hurling and in football. And while it's not on the plan that has gone out, there will also be a hurling league at senior and underage, junior, while the Nicky Rackard Cup is on. So one thing we were keen as a CCC, that we make sure we're providing enough games for all our players. We're going to have possibly 410 at least minimum games, when you include under 21, junior B, senior C, if, you know, they may be amalgamated, reserve leagues, reserves championships at all levels. So we're aiming to put together over 400 games, you know. And what we wanted to do, look, what we wanted to do compared to other years, players will not have played the 15 pre-championship games, so that they'll normally have played before they place championship. They'll have 2 or 3. So we wanted to make sure that after the championship was over, they're not forgotten about. We want to keep going in some sort of a meaningful football. So we've added in quarters, semis, and county finals. And the same at hurling. We will do exactly the same. We will provide hurling once their championships are over also.
Fantastic stuff. I think probably what you're saying there, Ed, is, you know, as soon as we get the green light, everybody wants everything perfect, and we got to work with it. It's far from a perfect time, but isn't it brilliant that something happened, Ed? You know, we have 16 teams in the senior championship, 12 in the intermediate, 10 in the junior. We have 5 in the hurling. The finals now, we have a roadmap. We have a date on 27th of September for the finals for all the three footballs, the three football championships, and the hurling ends a week later. So, Ed, fantastic stuff. Ed, just on the live stream, if people want to approach that, how do clubs look into that? Because I know there's a lot of red tape around it. I remember clubs giving off before about it, but you think that might be relaxed somewhat now?
Well, no, the hours that are fixed with the broadcasters are fixed times, Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon. So we may have to work around that, but they'd need, if there is an interest in a game being streamed, it'll be the county PRO, John McAniff, who will be dealing with all of that end of things. So that's who the clubs ultimately will liaise with. Going back to our hurling, Brendan, I am conscious we've dual players and that, and their championship kicks off immediately rather than a run into it. Now, there is, you know, also regional leagues that weekend. In the same way that you would expect in the senior football championship, and that when you look at the hurling, there is a little bit of crossover with dual players. They are football and they are hurling players. We're not going to have them on the same day. Indeed, we may be able to opt for a Friday, Sunday. It could be football this week and hurling on the Sunday and the football on the Friday. So the clash is going to be very, very minimal. I think it's round 3 and maybe round 4. And then in the of championships, that is, in round three in the junior. I know at the beginning there is clashes with regional leagues, but I'm pretty certain clubs will work together on that, and we'll certainly be ensuring that the fixtures don't clash on the same day or within a 24-hour. Most adults are, I would presume, able to play, and you'd be better able to tell me this, most adults are able to play two games in 72 hours. I don't think that's unreasonable. Mm. And bear in mind, the Nicky Rackard is being started in and around, I think, the 25th of October. And we want to afford our senior hurling team the same preparation time as our footballers. And they're probably getting a bit less. But we also want to ensure that when our hurling starts, that it's not starting the same weekend as football and that it's undermined in any way. So the hurling will have its own final day. The hurling will also kick-start our championships in Donegal for 2020, and that is fairly novel.
Yeah, Ed, listen, Brendan, thanks so much for joining us, Ed. I'm just, this thing about the 500, of images of people crawling through hedges and up trees everywhere around, grouds down to get a look at this action if they're not allowed in. That's going to be the huge thing for me. I don't know, Ed, as you're saying, is there a possibility that if things keep improving in the county around?
Well, from the end of August, let's say, that's during club championship in August, and from the end of August as we move into September, I believe we have to apply to have groups of more than or under 5,000 to attend games. But again, look, it's like everything. We haven't got, we've been told these are the numbers that have been laid out by the HSC. It may change. We also, I suppose, will be getting advice on how social distancing is supposed to be take place at club grounds. I don't know what way that'll work with numbers.
Yeah. I suppose, yes, it's not fair either that, say, one club would have a bigger ground, so therefore they're allowed more people in. That wouldn't be that fair either, you know, that it would work out like that, even though technically it should. But then you would have the issue of certain clubs have been letting in more home fans, etc. So, listen, hopefully...
There's a lot of things to be worked out just yet. But, look, we have time. We have time in the will. There will be new regulations, Brendan. Some of the things, just to let you know on this one, some of the things that are up for discussion, who's going to be inside of the pitch? At the moment, it's looking like a manager, a medic, and the person signing the sub slip, so your club secretary or nominated person. There's discussions on whether we would have water breaks during the game, the closest stop in play to 15 minutes, or water carriers. The day of the water carrier being inside the pitch enclosure is gone. The day of the Mayor Farnia probably running out onto the field for this year is probably gone. All these things have to be discussed. And unfortunately, that's what goes with this virus, that we have to try as best to protect everybody. Referee, players, everybody have to be protected here. So the numbers inside are the traditional numbers, and it may see a limit on panels. You know, there may be only a panel of, let's say, 21 or 22, and the rest will have to be outside of the field. Generally, if they're in a larger grounds, they sit in the stand anyway. But if you're in a club grounds that doesn't have a stand, you may just, it's a strong possibility that it will be limited to six subs and three other people, being one medic and the manager, and as I said, the secretary. And again, the likes of the medic will have to be waited to be called by the referee.
Yeah.
All of these things are up for discussion. I'm afraid the days of runners and water carriers are gone.
Yeah. I think we can manage without them, Ed, somehow, as long as we get this action back. Listen, Ed, thanks so much for clearing that up with us. And sure, as things progress now, if there's changes, we'll get some updates for you as the summer unfolds here. Thanks very much for joining us.
No bother. Thanks for having us.
Right, folks, now on the DL debate, I am delighted to say I'm joined by, for me, the best footballer that's ever played Gaelic football. You can keep your Morris Fitzgerald or Jack O'Shea's. It's going to take me a while to introduce this man. Such is the history behind him. You know, He's won six All-Stars for a start, not a bad start. Two All-Irelands, the first of his county. Four All-Stars, two National Leagues. And then with his club, the great Errol Kearn, he's won six Tyrone titles, two All-Stars. Top of that, underage, he's under 21 titles, All-Ireland vocational schools. Of course it is, the great Peter Canavan.
Hi, Brian.
Peter,
how are you?
I'm the best, sir. I'm the best. Peter, just saying there, looking through your career at the weekend, I probably knew maybe 60% of it, but just looking in at it, the history that came behind you and the amount of big games and literally, Peter, every team you joined, they won, and they won big. I don't think that was any coincidence at all.
Well, I'll give you another list, Bren, with all the defeats that we had and finals that we lost and them offs and all the rest. It's not pretty.
Well, do you know what, Peter? That's a wee bit like me without the stuff that you won. The perfectionist that you are, the ones that got away haunt you. And something that you've said later on, I'm going to play a wee clip, is very poignant to that there. And I'm going to bring you back to the stuff that wasn't won as well. And my God, Peter, there's plenty on the other side. But Peter, a lot of people on the show, we've gone back into the youth and the upbringing and really, I suppose, the bedding in of GAA and the mentality. And for you, it was massive in your house. Your three brothers played, obviously you and Pascal played for Tyrone. Your dad, your uncles. There was this huge GAA love in the house, and obviously I didn't realise, I knew there were some issues with the club back in the day and some underage, and your pitch was it called the home, was it? Where you
the
used
home
to,
the home was a wee small pitch. You'd actually drive past it, Brendan, down below Kelly's before you come to Ballygolly, and the main Ballygolly to Homer Road. But that was our pitch, yeah, when we were, it used to be the club years ago, there would have been games played on it by St. Kieran's, Ballygolly and other clubs, but it would have been too small nowadays for games. But that's where Glenn Cull would have trained and would have played matches and ran tournaments when I was a cub, yeah.
Yeah. And Peter, that the issues with the club and that, obviously I'd be up your way a lot. I'd be up with likes of Coots and Ballygolly, I'd be around your territory, often be asking about you, you know. You had a bit of a silo out the back of the house, and you and the brothers would have went at it, and it was just something, I suppose. Peter, not only was it a different time, it was just a different world. I mean, All-Ireland's in that time, there was no mention of a Tyrone. You only had the odd game of football would have been on TV. But certainly, that's where what life revolved around for you. It was all GAA football.
Well, it's hard to explain to youngsters now. Mobile phones, forget about it. There's no such thing. And the games that I recall everybody in the house gathering round to watch was the All-Ireland semi-final and the All-Ireland final. They were on live, and the Sunday game obviously was on Sunday evening, so there wasn't a pile of football to be watched on TV. It was more soccer. In terms of outside, earliest memories definitely would be, there was 11 in our house, so we had five brothers and five sisters, and the main source of entertainment for the boys messing about the house would have been kicking the ball up, it was a two-storey house, kicking the ball up on the roof, and the scrummaging and the wrestling, trying to win the ball when it came back down again, was where you learned some of the dark arts and finer arts of the game. You had to learn to stand up for yourself. But yeah, I lived on a farm, and but football was very central to everything that we did in the house. We didn't know anything else, I suppose. And with the split in the club, it even brought football to greater prominence, because there was a lot of hurt, there was a lot of bad feeling at the time in our area over the split in the club. As you'd imagine, if it was to happen in any club, there's always two sides, and we were the side that would try to form a new club. And for 9 years, basically, there was no recognised football, official football as such. Every year we tried to get affiliated to become a registered club, and the county board, out of loyalty to the existing club, refused to give us permission. So basically, and I was only, 10, 11 at this stage, the only underage football that I ever got was challenge matches, and that was the same for the older fellas in the club, Pascal and Stevie, older brothers. So it was week in, week out, we were running around the place looking for challenge matches to play, and that was the only football as such that we were getting.
Yeah, but it just seems amazing that it went on for 9 years, you know, when you think about you as a young lad, it was terrible. But then you've guys that maybe, if that had happened when you turned 20, 21, you could have missed out on a whole senior career.
Absolutely. Well, my older brother, Stevie, would have been the one that missed out most because he played for Throne Minors and he played for Throne Under-21s and then the split happened. So he should have been playing on, definitely would have been on the panel without a doubt. And 86 and that when Throne got to the All-Ireland final. And there was a number of other boys that were good enough that possibly would have made it. Pascal didn't play any minor or under 21 as well, you know, so he lost out there. So it was a serious split and there was a lot of negotiation. The Ulster Council was involved. Central Council, I recall the president of the association, I don't know what year, was Mick Loftus, a man that you probably know, Bren. Mick was actually directly involved himself. I recall him coming to our house, speaking with my father, and he was speaking to different Mickey Hart and different bodies, trying to get this thing sort of, this mess sorted out. And what really sorted it out eventually was Cardinal O'Fee, was Archbishop at the time. He actually sent commissioned Father Haggerty, Father Sean Haggerty, who would have managed Armagh and heavily involved in the GAA. He sent him to the parish as a curate with the remit of sorting this mess out because the parish was so badly divided. And Father Sean, in his own very distinguished way, came in and got the two sides talking. He told us a pack of lies that the Gaelic wanted us back, and he told them a pack of lies, and everybody bought into his plan anyway. And to cut a long story short, he managed to get everybody together again, speaking again, and as such, a new club, the club called Airgill Cairn after the parish name, was reformed. And from then, thankfully, we've gone on from strength to strength.
A wee white lie suits here and there, surely. Peter, just looking, you're obviously 84 there, you know, after the famous Frank McGuigan Ulster final, a feat that you would emulate yourself later down the line in terms of scoring feat, that amazing 11 points from play. You went to Croke Park, you were at that game 84, were you, in Dublin?
I was at the Ulster final with my father and a few neighbours. We went up to see Throne Armagh play, and that was the day McGuigan scored the 11 points. The difference between his and the 11 points that I scored in Ulster final, all of his was from play, right, left, and he scored one with his fist as well.
That was amazing.
It was an amazing performance. I don't know if you've seen it, but get onto YouTube and watch it. It's the sort of stuff that you would dream of doing in a championship match, never mind an Ulster final. So yes, and then we were down in Croke Park for Dublin and Throne. And that was actually my first time, so I was, 13, down to support the county in an All-Ireland semi-final. But Dublin were very strong at that time and turned them over.
And Peter, listen, as I say, the trajectory of your life, it didn't take you long to get back there. A vocational schools, All-Ireland was in the bacon. And for you, I suppose, without the club action, that must have been such an exciting time for a young lad.
It was, because I wouldn't get in a pile of football, and school was the main source. And I was fortunate. St. Kieran's High School in Ballygolly was a school I attended, would have been well recognised at that time. And our mentors, among others, was Mickey Hart and Robbie Hassan, in particular, was very good as well. So we were getting good football and good matches and doing well at school. But I got the opportunity then to play with the Throne Vocationals. And at that time, there's no Throne Vocationals now, but at that time, the big attraction of winning an Ulster title at vocational level was the All-Ireland final at vocational schools level was number one, played in Croke Park, which was, you know, for a young lad, that was a dream. And the second thing was it was played before the National League final. So I think in 1988 was the first time that we played. Dublin and Meath were playing in the National League final, and you can imagine the crowd that it was at that, and we got to play before it. So that was special, and I recall at the time, Bren, that I actually took a lump of grass. We won the game, and I took a lump of grass from Croke Park because I said, God knows when I might never play on this pitch again, and it was always something that I would have dreamt about. But thankfully, I got to play on it a few times since then.
You did indeed, the grace did well. Tell me, Peter, the county minor management were after you. Of course, you weren't affiliated to a club, and you have an interesting way of being able to get on the team. Shades of Shanny Johnson there down in Kildare a few years ago.
That's right. Well, obviously, I was playing on with the Throne Vocationals, and I'd done well, and we had won an All-Ireland title. So the manager of the Throne Minors was Francie Martin from Carrickmore, and Francie was adamant that I was going to play for Throne. I was a Throne man. I supported them. I lived in it. And that if I can represent me school and Throne schools, then I can represent the Throne Minors. But the county chairman and the county board at the time told him no, that he couldn't pick me, that I wasn't a registered member of the association. And he was adamant that he was going to play me. And I think I was training and all, and they were quite aggressive with him and warned him and said that there'd be no game if he was going to play me, because he had me down to play, I think, the week before the match. He had me down on the team lists and all the rest. And it was at a later hour, I suppose, that somebody got on to Francie and about getting me registered as a hurling player. And so Brendan Harkin was involved in the county board, and he was a Killyclacher man. So he had no objection for me to register under Killyclacher Hurling Club. So the very first game I played for the Throne Minors was against Antrim in Oma, and in the programme, right enough, there's my name at wing half forward with Killyclacher Hurling Club underneath it.
You didn't actually ever take up that challenge?
No, I actually played a few games for Dungannon when I was at school, with the coach came round, but not at all. I was never went near, never played any hurling for Killyclacher at all. It was just a case of getting me registered to play for the minors.
And that minor side then, Peter, the season you had there?
No, very good. We had a great run. We won the Ulster title, beat Cavan well in the final. Our toughest game that year, believe it or not, was against Donegal in the semi-final. That was 88. So Donegal's main man that day was Tony Boyle, and he was brilliant. And Donegal probably felt that they should have beat us in the semi-final in Irvinestown. We just about got past them. We beat Cavan in the final, and Kerry actually beat us in the All-Ireland semi-final, a game that we could have won at a chance at the very end, more or less the last kick of the game, from 45 yards out, and just fell a bit short. The goalkeeper caught it on the crossbar, and that would have got us the draw. So that, whilst it was great to get there, it was a heartbreaking defeat as a minor in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, tough stuff, Peter, at that age. So, Peter, the club, Errigal Kearney, say, reformed in 89, and you kicked down the under-21s there, Peter, and something keeps coming up as I was looking at, Peter, between the second coming of you later with Tyrone under-21s again, and then obviously you get involved in management. But at your own time of playing, you're involved in a brilliant team, 90, 91 and 92. Unbelievable times for Tyrone. Peter?
It was, there was a real great buzz around those teams, because at that stage, Tyrone hadn't won much at all, Ireland level, be it minor, under-21, or obviously would have won at senior. So we won three Ulsters in a row, brand 90, 91 and 92. And in 1990, we beat Meath in the semi-final, and our star-studded Kerry team beat us in a great final down in Mullingar. Morris Fitz was in his element. Billy O'Sullivan, I don't know if you recall him playing, scored four goals that day from corner forward. Billy O'Shea, Moynihan, they were brilliant. But the following year, we got back to play Kerry again in the final, and it was at Newbridge, and most of our team was still underage, and we gave them a good going over. We beat them well in the final in Newbridge, and the third, and that was our first ever All-Ireland on the 21 title. So there was serious buzz about the county. I recall the crowds at the games too was massive. And we repeated defeat in 1992. We defeated Kerry in the semi-final. And we had with Galway in the final in Longford again, maybe 12,000-13,000 at the final. The place was packed. Real big crowd, Jar Fallon and John Dively, real good Galway team as well. Clancy and all that, and we just about got over the line. But it was a brilliant thrown team. A lot of boys that you would have played against and you would have known well, the two Lawns, Faye Devlin, Aidan Kilpatrick, Aidan Cush, Paul Donnelly, Kieran Lahan, Brian Gormley, you know, a lot of players that obviously went on, and Danny Barry, Aidan Kilpatrick, midfield, really strong, Jimmy McConnell. So look, it was great times for Throne, and as an underage player, it was brilliant to be getting that sort of football and winning those titles.
And Peter, something that I wasn't aware of for a lot of these teams that you play, but you were captain as well. You know, you think when I think back, they say if you were the kind of the go-to forward, the main forward, there would often be another guy would be maybe installed as captain, because certain days maybe the forward can be put off his game or he can be tied down and it might affect the team. Whereas you, none of your managers had any issue with that. They obviously seen you as not only, you know, a player that can orchestrate so much of the team, but obviously a talker and a communicator, which you must have had from a very young age.
Well, I didn't think much of it at the time, but when I look back now, you know, as manager and you're involved in coaching, you do think a lot about who you're going to appoint as captain and the qualities that he brings. But maybe I was more forward than the rest of the boys, Brian, or I was talking too much. I don't know. But and the fact that I would say that I didn't get a lot of football at in terms of club football the whole way through maybe meant that I was a bit more hungry, for want of a better word, than other men, and a bit more motivated. I don't know, but
I heard Peter actually, you had a streak in you, you know, a wee bit of a wild streak. There was a fella, Mickey Moyna, kind of took you under his wing and played a big part in it. You know, I do talk to people around Throne there about you, because I'm always looking inside track.
I was easily led by a few boys.
Very good.
The fellas that went to our car, went in the car for the Throne games at the start, all the games, there was no such thing as travelling on a coach, as you recall. I'm sure it's the same in Donegal. Maybe you're lifted by a designated driver. Our driver is Mickey Moyna, but in our car, from time to time, you had Dinky McBride, Paul Donnelly, Eamon McCaffrey, maybe, and there was mayhem in the car, and Mickey Moyna had a job just to try and keep everybody on an even keel and get us to the training and get us to the matches in time. But so the banter and the crack that we had with him now was something.
Funny, the fella told me, it was funny, Peter, he obviously took some serious shine to you. He was saying it was a hot day and everybody was gasping for water, and he and run across the pitch and they were shouting at him, but he was going to you and you weren't even looking for water. Like, as long as Peter's sorted, everybody else will be all right. Yeah. But Peter, tell me, as things with the club then, obviously in 89, it didn't take as long to get your act together, and Danny Ball, of course, was synonymous with Throne GA. Commanding managers after he had managed you at under 21, made you captain again. You were only 22 here, and of course a championship beckoned straight away. And again, Peter, for, you know, everybody talks about the county and that's what we see, but the club, you know, the love of your area in terms of the buzz that brings, such a different thing. And again, Peter, so quickly you got up to speed and were champions of Tyrone.
Well, it was strange that the coming together and the club reforming, you know, took a bit of time. There was a bit of figuring out to be done and restructuring. But the first year back playing as Airgill Kieran, the Glen Cull side, we actually played as a team as the third, Airgill Kieran third. So we played in Division 3. So my first year playing senior football was in Division 3 in Throne.
A few elbows out for you there, Happy.
It was an eye-opener, to be honest. But we ended up winning the league. We got beat in the championship in a lively encounter, but in terms of blooding you and getting you ready, some of the things that I witnessed, it was an eye-opener, to say the least. So that was, I think, 90. And then this following year, it was the best players in the parish, obviously, was playing on the first team. And 91, 92, we didn't make it. We were getting there slowly but surely. And then in 93, Danny Ball came in. And the one thing about the split, what it did do was it made everybody in the parish realise how important football is to us. Literally, there was men who didn't speak, cousins didn't speak to one another. But getting back together again, the setup was much different, and things was done on a more professional level, and everybody bought in. And Danny coming in, he was an outside man. He had no hang-ups with anybody, and he was a ruthless manager. He was very strong and forceful, and it was what we needed. And Doonan Gallagher, the coach, who was the coach with the Throne Under-21s, he came in with him. Brilliant trainer at the time, really good, and got everybody working hard. And, yeah, we went on. We beat Moortown in the final, and that was the first title that came to the club in over 60, you know, 61, 62 years.
Kelly's in, and Podge
is... Podge
Corns would have been rocking then, Peter, after such a long wait.
It was unbelievable. We went, the game was needing dark, so we stopped in Podge Quinn's first on the way up to Kelly's, where Kelly's was the team sponsor, and we got a feed and all. But there was a party atmosphere, all right. The place was hopping in Podge's, and then we went to Kelly's. And literally, it was the first time I got to see men drunk on emotion. Mickey Hart, in particular, was one man. You would have swore that he was out of his head and something. The man didn't drink or smoke or nothing, but
yeah.
It was just, there was euphoric scenes and a buzz that probably was never replicated in the club since that.
Yeah.
And my father and a number of men that had been going to football their lifetime, waiting to see the club win something and to win a county title, you know, so soon and after the club reforming, was massive.
And Peter, you and Pascal
really united the club.
Yeah, and you was the four Canavans playing on this team?
There was Barry, Stevie. Barry was on the bench that day. He had played in the earlier rounds and was dropped for the final. Stevie was wing half forward. Was the main player in the team. Pascal was midfield. Myself and Hugh Quinn, and then I was full forward. So there were four of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen that come up with a few people was on there. Even Pat McEnany was singing his own praises there for the five McEnanys playing up in the Monaghan Junior Championship with that there. So a lot of families have a big influences and teams, no more than yourselves. But Peter, you didn't hang about there. When in Tyrone, you decided here, let's get at Ulster, and you know that's amazing. You just went down there and just went at it. You often see teams that won a first year there; it doesn't happen for them in Ulster. But that wasn't something that was in your mindset.
No, what a really good campaign, and this was all new to us, Brendan, and the crowd. And in fairness to other Throne clubs, they really got behind us in their push to win too. Because I recall really big crowds going to the games. The first game was against Lavey. And Omagh and Lavey were All-Ireland champions a couple of years before that. You know yourself, the McGurks and Downies and the quality of the players they had. So defeating them gave us a real big lift. But the two games that everybody in the club still talks about in that campaign to win an Ulster title was the next, it was the semi-final, and we played Kilkear in Irvinestown. Now, it was obviously in late November that there, because the ground was really heavy. The 2 days we played them, it was very sticky and heavy going. And was, you know, watching back footage, again, the crowd that was at the game and the atmosphere for those games really stand out. The first game was end-to-end. There was goals. They may have scored two or three. We definitely got one or two. Really good game of football, and ended up a draw. And the second game a week later was a real physical battle. It was tough stuff, and watching some of the tackles again, we watched it with the young boys here a few weeks ago, and they were laughing at the tackles and how the referee, the amount of stuff that the referee let go. There was much more kicking in the game, so the ball was moving faster. And the score was 5-3 to Errigal. And I recall different reporters after that game complaining about, you know, only 8 scores, maybe 5 of them from play, 4 of them from play or something like that there. But to play in it and to watch it again, it was easy to watch. To me, it was full of intensity and great blocks, great hits, some great catching. And yet people wrote us off because we only, you know, dire football, we only won us 5-3. So we went into, and that Kilcar team, you know, Martin McHugh, James, was playing really well. Sheehan, that the Kilcar's a very strong team. So we knew that we had been through a tough battle and won it. But a lot of people were writing us off. We played Downpatrick in the Ulster final. And again, Down had won the All-Ireland in 91, and a lot of those players were still involved, the Deegans and Barry Breen. So Downpatrick would have went in hot favourites, and we managed to turn them over and won as well, I think, 3 or 4 points maybe. So that was massive again for the club, and we were the first, and still are, the only Throne club to have won an Ulster club title.
Yeah, just unreal. I mean, obviously Donegal had this massive thing from 75 up into the recent Gidoor win.
I would say there's what, maybe 4 or 5 Donegal teams have won an Ulster club.
We've had a similar kind of, I suppose, history in the competition, Peter. So, you know, the fact that you come in, you did that, Peter, and whenever you text me that you time to come on to talk to us this evening, I thought that was brilliant. And then I was looking at your career, and just looking at your Ulster campaigns, I know Nemo was your nemesis in semi-finals that period. What a team they had, like they basically maybe 9 or 10 county players.
That's right.
And again, that history that they had behind them, which didn't seem to matter used too much, maybe just that tiny bit of game know-how and the brilliance that they had. But looking at a couple of your Ulster runs, Peter, particularly one that every time for Unions, for example, we went down, we seemed to meet Cross McGlenn more often than not, and they just basically battered us and we went away. But I was just looking at some of your history with them in terms of the game that you were 9 points down and you come back at them, and then you got a replay and you went to Cross McGlenn. You were 9 points down again at half time and you somehow come back and got a draw. I mean, Peter, the ability to come back and then obviously beat them then in the third game, you drew after extra time. Just looking back, beating Ballanderry then and really beating all the powerhouses of Ulster. And as you say, for the history to not be in Tyrone, it was quite an amazing feat that you had for that. And of course, again, when you come out of Ulster, it was Nemo again, you know, and again, so close to, as you said, taking the where you wanted to be, which was take the club to the hallowed turf of Croke Park.
It was hard to believe. I'd say to this day, people in the club still would feel very sore about the Nemo defeat, because we were seconds away from getting to an All-Ireland final in St. Paddy's Day in Croke Park. Colin Corkery was playing in his prime for Nemo at that stage. Time was up. The game was in Newbridge. Brian, it was a real windy day. Second half, they were playing against a gale force breeze, and literally was gale force. And they're 45, more or less, the last kick of the game. And I would say very few players. I'd say Corkery might have been one of only 2 or 3 in the country that would have been capable of kicking it over the bar, and he did, to get a draw, and it went to extra time, and they beat us in extra time. So that was, and I think they went on and won the All-Ireland final by 15 points, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was a tough one. When they beat us, and they wouldn't have been as star-studded the following, when it was in 2002, that they beat us, they wouldn't have been the same team, but they were by far the better team. They deserved to beat us that day in Port Leash, but it was the first time round that we came really close to taking them out of it. But that campaign, the games across McLean were superb to play in. Really ding dust games. They were physical, they were close, there was plenty of good football in it, and to have played in them and they've come out the right side of them. And to win another Ulster was definitely a highlight of my own career.
Very, very few can say that with Crosby Glenn, Peter. So hats off to you. So, for Peter, coming on to your Tyrone, obviously you made your debut at 18. Strangely, it was your brother, Pascal, the two of you made the debut v Mayo. It was a time of bit of change in football. Of course, kicks were now out of hand. Now, obviously, Peter, you were a free kicker and you were kicking from the ground all the time, but you became then, obviously, you were well able to do that, but kicks out of hands were going to suit you going forward. You were now in with the idols, the guys you had looked up to, some real powerhouse, some Tyrone legends, I suppose. And again, Peter, that them early days, it must have been pinch yourself stuff that you were in that dressing room.
Ach, it was, because Tyrone had got to the All-Ireland final in 86, and for us as youngsters in school at that, you know, that was massive. We'd never seen that before, never seen Tyrone playing an All-Ireland final, and the hype and the buzz. So I was going to watch these boys, big supporter, obviously. And then a few years after that, I was lining out with them to play in the National League. And at that stage, the National League was in October, November. You played two or three games, you'll recall that. And so our first game was, I think, October or early November against Mayo in Castlebar. And Mayo had played Tyrone in All-Ireland semi-final that year, a few months before, and had just beat them. So, again, there were, for that reason, there was a massive crowd in Castlebar, and that was my debut game I'll never forget. So we're now playing with Eugene McKenna and Damien O'Hagan, John Lynch, Plunkett Donnelly, and all these boys. And you're right, literally, you were in awe of them, and you were watching everything that they did and everything they said. And it was hard to believe in such a short space of time that I was actually playing at that level.
Fantastic, Peter. And then, of course, there was a wee trip to Toronto then, which must have been a great way for you to get to know the boys and see about the world.
Well, unbelievable. That was our first year in, and because Tyrone had got to the All-Ireland semi-final, I think the trip might have been for the two teams that were in the All-Ireland final, but those teams were in an All-Star trip or something, or couldn't go. So Tyrone and Dublin were invited out to Toronto, all expenses paid, some big fancy hotel in city centre in Toronto, and we were treated like kings. So talk about getting to know boys and having the crack, and listening to a few yarns. And nobody can tell stories better than Plunkett Donaghy. So the crack was good, and to start off with, it was some trip.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And just you, I used to call him the Raymond Monroe there, and when I was in Carrigmore too. And the depth of football of them, you know, you mentioned Tony Boyle there a wee while ago, and no more than myself. We hear, Peter, there was a lot of kind of soccer net going in the round. And it was something when I went to the north that just was kind of unheard of. You were GAA and that was it. And I know, obviously, the troubles led to a lot of that as well. But I just looked at your upbringing and the way it was just totally focused on that, Peter. And I think, for me, even personally, you know, Tony could probably speak for himself, but it probably would have been much better that way, because it seems strange now, Peter, but at the time there was a more, I suppose, relaxed attitude to GAA here, and you would have played a bit here and played a bit there. But there's no doubt it probably took your focus away. Whereas, speaking of Raymond Monroe, you know, that man could talk football deep, 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 and that's the kind of the cauldron that you were in. But it was going to make the best of who you were, and you weren't long, Peter, making your mark on that team. And that was a team that was, I suppose, knocking on the door to get across the line in terms of winning All Ireland.
It was a brilliant team, and we never got past the first round. The first 3 years that I played for Tyrone in the Championship, Brendan, we lost every game. We were knocked out in the first round. And if there had been a back door then, I believe that there was great potential in that team, because you had a number of the younger boys coming up, really good players, but you had the backbone of a team that came very close to winning All-Ireland for Tyrone, but we never got to see the best of them. And it was simple. Why did we not win much in the early 90s? Well, take a look around you. Who were you coming up against? You had Donegal, you had Derry, you had Down. Teams that all were winning All-Ireland. And so
Eventually, you clicked into gear, though, Peter. No, listen, that's why it seems hard to see now, Peter, with the back door.
But then, if you can imagine now, you know, players training and putting an amount of effort into it just to play one game. And if you were injured for that game or if you were suspended, you're left scratching your head thinking, why did I put in all that effort just for one game? So I suppose that was why the back door did come in. You know, players could only put up with so much of that. But that's how frustrating it was. 90, 91, first round, 92, first round, 93, the first 4 years that I played for Throne, we were, our summer was over after one game of Championship football. So it was extremely frustrating at that time.
Yeah, and you know what, Peter, that's the exact same story as Michael Murphy when he came into Donegal. 4 years, he lost. Now, he had the back door, obviously, but he didn't win a game in Ulster for 4 years. And so Art McCrory, Eugene McKenna were in there, you know, heart and soul. They were trying to get something together. We obviously had the four brilliant Ulsters in a row. So 95, the Tyrone boys were coming of age, and yourself in particular, and it was time to make the mark.
Yeah, there was a massive push. Funny, we were talking there. There was different focus on the 95 semi-final during the week. It's 25 years ago since we played Derry in the Ulster semi-final, and that was a massive turning point for the team because we had never, I think it was eight or nine National League Championship games. The last 8 or 9 games Derry had beat us. They beat us in the National League final. They beat us in different times in the first round in the Championship. You know, beating us in the National League, they were holding the upper hand on us, and we beat them. We were down at half time. We were 3 points down and 2 men down. Pascal and Jamie McGannon had been sent off. So talk about backs to the wall and having an uphill battle, but we came out the right side of it. We won that game, and that really put us on a strong footing going forward that year. Year before as well, 94, we got to the Ulster final. So we knew we were getting there, a really good down team. I would say one of the best teams that I would have played against around that era was that 94 down team. They were so strong physically and up front. You know, they had quality and a mixture of quality, pure class and hardness. You know, Greg Blaney was in the middle of it. And then you had Mickey Linton, Lee James, and they were just a superb team. And getting to that Ulster final was a great eye-opener for us. And 95, we went on to win Ulster there.
Yeah. And then the fall, the 2 seasons in, Peter, just were obviously the All-Ireland that got away from you, the one that did.
Yeah, in 95 and 96 both were very disappointing. 95, you know the story, we beat Galway in a semi-final, and it was a case of we were going down representing Ulster here for looking for 4 in a row or 5 in a row. 91 down, 92 Derry, 93 Donegal, 94 down again. So we wanted to be, you know, the next Ulster county to bring the Sam home and to keep it coming this way, and we weren't able to do that. You know, there's a lot of hype at the time that Dublin needed an All-Ireland more than ever, and to keep, you know, the flag flying down there. Soccer was getting a lot of publicity and coming into a lot of prominence. But whether that was the case or not, a number of poor decisions went against us on the day. But the bottom line was we didn't play as well as we can. We could have. A draw would have definitely been a fair result. I would have liked to have seen the two teams going at it again. And Dublin shaded it.
Yeah. And then the following season, you know, Ulster again, Peter, and then, of course, that famous game with Meath, where there was a lot of punishment given out, and that's a game, I suppose, that kind of really knocked the team back.
That was it. It wasn't the defeat in the All Ireland final that knocked the stuffing out of the team. It was the Meath defeat, literally knocked the stuffing out of us, because the football that we played that day, and even the football in the first half against Meath, Trump played some great football, but Meath knew that they had to make the game physical. It suited them, and it was one of those games that, you know, a lot of people are very critical of me and all the rest, but we played games in Ulster that were physical too. And you know yourself, there's games that you would have played and the men would have hit you late or whatever. You got up, you played on, didn't make a flinch any. And the tackle that put me down and done damage to me with John McDermott. But in the Ulster semi-final that year, Brian McGilligan hit a similar shoulder charge. He came in late after it hit the ball. I bounced up and there's nothing wrong with me. But that day against Meath, every time they hit somebody, they put them down, they drew blood out of them. It was just surreal when you were watching it again, the way it panned out. And Throne didn't stand up to them as well as they should have physically. And that was hard to take and hard to stomach. And the team didn't recover from Art and Eugene stepped aside. And it was a hard one to take because we felt as a group that we were moving in the right direction and that we were ready to lift Noel Ireland. But the manner of that defeat was sore.
Yeah. And it, like Peter, I suppose there was 4 or 5 years there where the team, I suppose, didn't get back to the pitch of it. And it was almost a second coming, Peter. And again, going back to this 21, so it was Tyrone talent coming through. You were still there. And I know from talking to one of your teammates that was retiring in that time, you remarked them, and this is when Tyrone was at their lowest, that, listen, we're going to win All-Ireland, you may as well be here. And I thought that was amazing, Peter, that you said that. You obviously had this in your mind, this was going to happen. And at the time, you probably weren't sure what players were going to make it happen. But this talent started to come through. Mickey Hart took over the team, and Tyrone then started to come back to the power, to a team that was going to make a tilt at this All-Ireland again.
It was obvious looking at them. I was teaching in Holy Trinity, and I had success with a number of those boys in 1998, winning an All-Ireland title, Muggsy and Gavin Devlin, Fran Lahren and them boys. So, and the teams that we were playing against, St. Cairns and Killeen, all there was a lot of really talented footballers about. Throne at one minor All-Ireland that won on the 21, so you were optimistic, I definitely was, but it was a case of, you know, I'd seen it before, not everybody makes that step up from minor to senior, from under 21 to senior, and it takes a bit of time, so I wouldn't say with any certainty that, you know, that we were going to win an All-Ireland here. I might have been optimistic and keeping everybody at it, but you're never sure.
Yeah, and Peter, so you obviously won the league in 2002, and then 2000, even through the championship there, Armagh, I think, and then of course the Sligo game with Eamon O'Hara on last week. That was a huge game for them when you were in control, and then yeah. Sligo had this ability just to get on a run and come back at you, and they played with this mad spirit. And obviously that was a year, Peter, that you were like, right, you've come back refocused, and of course 2003 then was to be that year, you know, one of the biggest years of your life, obviously. And it didn't get off to a massive start. The draw with Derry, I think, did you hit the equalising free? I just thought of Donegal when against Cavan as well. They were lucky to get out of a draw in the first round. Isn't it funny how it's almost a stuttering start and what might not have been?
That's right. A couple of things, Brian. The first thing, back to 2002, a lot of people overlooked the fact that Throne won the National League in 2002. Again, if you're looking for signs that this team was emerging, I was in a lot of good teams in my career, Throne teams, that couldn't win a National League. This team did. So, with a very young squad of players, so I think that was a massive thing for Throne to be seen to win. That was our first ever national title that we won, so at senior level. So that was a big thing. And the defeat against Sligo was demoralising, and it knocked the stuffing out of a lot of the older fellas that maybe was in the team, because it was the same old story. Throne went down, promised in Croke Park, but weren't able to deliver. And Sligo, you know, we were very good in the first half and played some brilliant football, some great scores. Sligo outran us and outplayed us. They were superb and thoroughly deserved their victory. But we were still young, and a lot of lads still had to physically develop and fill out, you know, Cormacs and Kevin Hughes and boys that got there, and they certainly did that. The game that you, that started 2003, and we won the league again in 2003. So we were going in very confident form to the championship against our arch rivals in Derry, and we just about got out of it. At a kick, free kick at the very end, on the wrong side. I don't think Stevie O'Neill was on the pitch at the time, so I was about 30 yards out, so I went ahead of it. And I recall Conleth Gilligan, who I'd be friendly with, was egging me on just as I was lining up to hit it with the outside of my boot. He was saying, "Jesus, you can't hit it with your outside of your boot. They can go, you know, you can miss hit them, you can miss hit them, don't hit it with the outside." So I kept the head down, and thankfully it went over the bar, and he came over with a big smile on his face after. But that's how close we were to be knocked out of the championship. And if we had lost that game, a young team, we may not have been able to recover. You just don't know what way it would have panned out for us. Mm. But that was a massive game, and then we beat them convincingly in the replay up at Chasement Park the week after.
It was amazing also, championship that year, Peter. It had everything in it. You know, there's one thing about Tyrone, I think, at that stage, that maybe some other teams, the entertainment was there. You played with great pace, and the youth coming through, there were scores coming everywhere, and you at the heart of it. It was one of the best Ulster championships I'd seen in terms of entertainment.
It was funny, a number of players from our county that I was chatting to, our past players, commented on the thrown and down game. I think it was on TV recently, the drawn game. Yeah. And when you watch it again, it was fast, the speed of it, the ball was moving quicker, there's none of this going sideways. And the quality of the scores, Benny Coulter was in his prime, scored a brilliant goal that day. Gregory McCartan was playing before he got sent off, controversial sending off. So it was good football, and for us to come back from being, I think it was 9 points down in the second half, and just to hang on and to get a draw that day was really the making of the team. We didn't look back after that.
Yeah, and of course the famous semi-final with Kerry, where the aristocrats, you upset them on the day, Peter. It was funny, the outpouring from that game, and the brilliant football Tyrone played seemed to be forgotten about. The swarm tackling you did wasn't like a defensive structure we've seen later. You attacked them everywhere and anywhere, and I think what you did was up the ante, fitness and work rate and just sheer aggression and passion for the game, but it was also allied with some brilliant football and brilliant play, which I think gets lost sometimes when people look at that game.
Well, I'm glad to hear you saying that, because that's exactly what I say to anybody that, you know, talks about that, you know, 40-second clip or whatever of the tackling. And I says, if you get a chance to watch the first half, you'll get an understanding of the way, a better understanding of the way Tyrone played that day, and tell me if it was puke football after, because we really blitzed Kerry and really went at them. And we could have had two or three goals in the first half. And Kerry, it wasn't defensive football, because Kerry, when the ball was kicked up, a lot of the time it was one-on-one inside. Even the 2005 All-Ireland final, if you watch it again, which was a brilliant game of football as well, you know, Kerry inside forwards kicked some good scores, and it wasn't a case of blanket defence. But, you know, people ask, how did that pan out, that series of tackling? It was sheer hunger. And it was an acknowledgement that if you give Kerry time and space on the ball, such was the quality of their the way they played, that they would have destroyed us. So you could say it was out of fear, but it wasn't a set plan. It was every man had to make a difference and had to tackle and chase and hurry with everything that you had. And that's all it was.
Yeah, I think, you see, Peter, history has mixed it up between the blanket defence that came after that, you see, which wasn't really how you played at the time. You know, you played high intensive, high tackling. Sure, you had to drop players back. You would have defended a lead at times. So did everybody. But it was very different from the rigid nature that was to come. And I think it somehow got mixed up. And is this where it started? That
absolutely
wasn't really the start of it. You just played a different style, you know.
Absolutely not. And some people don't believe you when you tell them that. And it was very simple. The tactic was very simple. Gavin Devlin was centre back, was a good reader of the game. He tried to hold his position as much as possible, like most other centre backs at that time. But everybody else was man to man and playing their natural game. So our wing half forward line consisted of Brian McGuigan in the centre. Now, if you go and watch Brian play for his club or any times you've seen him playing for Throne, he'll pop up anywhere. He'll be in it, taking the ball off the full-back, but he'll also be getting up, kicking the ball over the bar. Brian Duher, go and watch him play. How can you tell him to stay in one area of the pitch? He's all over the pitch, and he'll run, literally run all day. That was his natural game. And Jerry Calvin, who was a midfielder for his club, playing wing half forward, and again, extremely fit, well able to cover ground. So there was no blanket defence. It was one man holding the middle, and everybody else was playing their own style of football, their normal game, and that was our style, and that was the way we went about playing it. It was simple,
Yeah. Straightforward.
It wasn't rehearsed, and you're right. So many people confuse that with the start of blanket defence, and it was far from the case.
Far from it. Look at the game, and it'll tell you different. Listen, I agree with that, Peter. Listen, you were yourself, you and Moynihan were having a ding-dong. Of course, you knew Seamus well from your many days playing for Ireland. And you picked up an injury then, Peter. You got across the line. You're heading for an All-Ireland final. It's against, funnily enough, Armagh, first time ever. You maybe could have done without that being the case. You're near neighbours. And you, of course, instead of maybe having a great build-up to the game, it was all about trying to get your body right. The biggest day of your footballing life was about to come up, but you were on the physio table, or were you getting cures, or was there people praying over you, or what was happening?
It wasn't a great time before that for me, but the fact we're there and the fact we're in it was enough to keep you going. You had a chance of winning an All-Ireland medal, so myself and Moynihan, a game that I really looked forward to, because I knew I was going to be marking him, and we had great battles before in Railway Cup and different games, and I would be very friendly with him too. Pure footballer, no nonsense out of him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've come up against him. So I was really looking forward to that battle, and we were having a good battle. There was balls he won, there was balls that I won, and made good plays, but he came out after me. I went over an ankle, nothing to do with him at all, and that was me gone. The tendon was split, he required surgery, so that wasn't going to happen before the All-Ireland. So it was a case of trying to patch it up and see if we could get any time. I recall after the semi-final, Brian Carthy, in fairness to him, took me out to the great AK. He swore by him, and a number of other men told me, this is the man you've got to go to, he's a miracle man. And thanks to Brian, I was able to get in with him right away, and with our own physios and the great AK, we managed to get the ankle settled down as best we could, but I was nowhere near ready to play football. But Mickey sat down with me Friday before the game, and we weighed up the pros and cons. He wrote it down on a sheet of paper, and after half an hour he said, right, that's it, look, there's more advantages of you starting this game than there is coming on. So that's when I knew I was starting. And again, it's one of those things, Bren, there's lots of games that had very little luck in. This was a game that I got one or two handy balls, and literally I was keeping Andy McNulty out of the way, just taking him out of the game to try and leave space. Mulligan was in 1-on-1 with Francie Bellew, and we thought that was an area that we could really exploit. But in terms of free kicks, one of the reasons why Mickey wanted me was to hit free kicks, and the game would be nervy. We said there was going to be free kicks in this game. The referee was going to, because it was thrown in Armagh. And lo and behold, in the first half, we got 4 or 5 handy enough frees for me to kick over the bar. So it worked out okay from that point of view, but and then at half time it was case I wasn't going to miss the team talk, or I wanted to be involved in that, and then got injections or got it strapped up again for the last 10 or 15 minutes.
Back on again, it was meant to be, Peter, and of course you got, what was, I think, your destiny was a promised land, and a couple of words there just from that day.
I can't thank of a better position or a better place to be in right now anywhere in the world than where I'm standing. Words will not do justice to my feelings or the feelings of these players here at this precise moment.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Peter, we left out a couple of Focal there. I was just looking. you hadn't prepared anything because, as you said, listen, I've written loads of speeches that were never heard, and your mindset was just focused on that. But, Peter, that's a different pressure then when you're going up the steps in. You have a lot of people to thank and get the head together. So, fair play to you for pulling that off. I'm sure you weren't worried at the time, but there's an extra wee bit of pressure to get that done. And fantastic stuff, Peter, about that moment in time. Something that was on you about when we were speaking earlier, I thought it was very poignant when I heard that last night, because a bit like looking back and that, you know, the past, and I think in these times where we've been cocooned and cooped up, we've a lot of time for reflection, and really if it's reflection you don't need, then you need to put it away and just kind of live in the moment. And I love the fact that you said right here, right now, there's nowhere in the world I'd rather be.
Well, I wouldn't tell a lie, but the amount of people that had thrown, people that I spoke to, that said that they were abroad when I said that, and they were in tears because they wanted to be there, had thrown one All-Ireland. It wasn't meant to be that way, but they said it obviously had a chord with them because that was the place that any Throne supporter wanted to be as well. And a lot of them were abroad. But look, it was... I could have said anything, and I wouldn't have cared. We had a dream had come true. We had won All Ireland, something that I doubted many of the times that it was ever going to happen. So, literally, you know, I rambled on more than I should have, but there was a lot of people to thank and a number of people that I wanted to thank. I think it's Kevin Hughes keeping me right there beside me, so a few people that I forgot, he interjected.
And of course, Peter, your dad wasn't long past, and he was a huge part of your career, I'm sure. Looking down on you that day, must have been one like sad side to it, but again, you know, he'd have been so proud of you in that moment.
That's right. Well, he'd obviously seen me, he'd been heavily involved with me the whole way through, and him, like so many other Gaelic supporters and Gaels and Throne, spent their lifetime watching them and were waiting on the day that they'd win an All-Ireland. And unfortunately, when we did it, he wasn't there to see it. But it was tough. It was tough at the time. But, you know, Paul McGeer was obviously mentioned, and the boys were very close to him, and that was hard for them as well. And I'm sure everybody had somebody that close to them that would have loved to have seen, no different than in Donegal or any other county. You know, to see your county winning the Sam Maguire for the first time, you'd want to be there for.
Yeah, fantastic, Peter. It was just amazing scenes. And just looking back at the last night, I was so glad that the pitch invasion was still allowed at the time. And I don't know how they would have stopped the Throne crowd if they weren't at that point, because it just meant so much to the county after all those years of hurting. Peter, listen, I'm just conscious of the time here. And actually, when I first said to you, I was looking at last night, I was thinking, I could probably split you into maybe four or five shows. There's so much history there. Obviously, Peter, you followed it up with a famous All-Ireland one again. One wasn't going to be enough for you, of course, 2005, the famous free kick against Armagh in the semi-final, and then sorting out Kerry, Peter. And you know, at that stage, Peter, you'd done practically everything in the game. You'd come up with another All-Ireland, and you decided the trophy haul was enough. It was going to be time to hang up the boots soon.
Aye, but before I forget, the Monday, our homecoming, Brendan, I'm sure you know where we stayed that night in 2003. The Monday night that we came home with Sam Maguire.
Where did
the Sam Maguire stay that night?
Don't tell me it was in enemy territory.
It was. It was in Donegal.
Very good. For
some reason, we ended up in Ahayarn and stayed in the Abbey.
Right.
The Monday night.
Very good. Again,
something that a lot of people don't believe, that Throne won the Sam Maguire for the first time. We took it home and it ended up in Donegal.
Very good.
Willie John Dolan was the sponsor, you see, so Willie John got us back to Ahayarn, and we ended up staying, obviously, no hotels in Ahayarn. '05 was something else. It was a case of there wasn't the same pressure on Throne, and it's like anything, your club, when you've won the county championship, you can go out and express yourself times after, knowing that you're good enough to win it. So if you can imagine where the All-Ireland final in 03, Throne didn't play to their full potential, such was the nervous energy that was there, I think we could express ourselves a wee bit more, the boys were a bit more confident, and the quality of the football, and again, I got to see it recently, the 2005 was a great game to watch, because both teams played some very good football, both Kerry and Throne, and it was, again, really exciting times to be part of it. We had an inner drive, and that Cormac wasn't with us, and secretly, everybody wanted to really do it for Cormac and for his family, and thankfully, we were able to do that, but again, it was great days. 2005, that campaign, the whole way through, some of the games, was just a real thrill to be part of it, and to be there on some of our greatest days was brilliant.
And Peter, you know, fascinating stuff, and obviously, you know, everything that you brought then, obviously you're a family man, you've kids, you've daughter, Irish dancing champion, Dara's obviously coming up the line now, you've another son coming down the lane as well. Busy times, Peter, all in all. You went on then to manage the club and manage Tyrone under-21s, again, the successful All-Ireland, yourself and Duhu and big Fergal Logan. So, life's been busy, brilliant. You do articles, Peter. You're great on Sky as a pundit as well. So, still completely immersed in the GAA and life's all go, I imagine.
Well, no different than yourself. It's hard to let go of it. Once you have been so heavily involved at times, you really look forward to a break and getting away from it. And then, as like this past few months, once you do get that break, it recharges the batteries and you're itching for the football to start again and to become involved in it. So I suppose it's either in the blood or it's not, and some people understand it and some people don't. But again, thankful that I'm involved in a school that we're pushing hard and with some really good coaches, and I'm really enjoying working with them and the lads in school and what we're trying to achieve there. And fortunately, in the club, we're in Division One. We're competitive. We have a chance of winning things, and it's a really strong club here. So it's good to be. And then from the county end of things, our teams are competitive, be it minor, under 20s, anybody that works with them. You know that you're working with a good group of boys, and you have a chance of doing it very similar to Donegal. So it's a pleasure to help out from time to time, but it is. It's very hard to leave the football behind you, and if you're not directly involved yourself with the wee ones coming up, there's plenty to be done.
Yeah, and Peter, just talking to everybody, anybody that mentions you, I mean, obviously your talent and your ability, but very, very grounded, and that's a huge part of seeing it in GAA people, and that's why I think the captaincy and everything's come your way, and the effect that you've had on players. And Peter, just going to ask you a last question. I'm just thinking about you here, about a player. How much is a talent, God-given? You obviously had something in you that was there. It was then nurtured by your upbringing. But talent versus work rate, we also know talent doesn't equal success. But teams, timing, there's so much involved in a player. I just look at certain players, it's as if this is meant to happen. And just likened you, I suppose, to what happened Michael Murphy there. There was dips, but then there was great times, and for you, Peter, there was some amazing times that this seemed to be what your life was destined to be, and take Tyrone, of course, from never having won in All-Ireland all the way. It just seemed like it was your destiny. I know there was a lot of blips in there, but it's just that talent v timing, I think, and v, I suppose, input and interest in it, that all has to come together to make a player like yourself.
It's hard way up, but when you look back on my career, as I said at the very start of the show there, I'll show you a list of things that has happened to me and games that I lost, mistakes that I made, sending off injuries, and you would say that wasn't a pretty career. A man was very unlucky or very unfortunate. So I think no matter who you are or what your chosen sport is, I think you need a mentality where you treat success and defeat in the same manner, and you must be prepared to overcome setback if you want to achieve anything. And I know maybe a number of men didn't once they were hit with that, or defeat or loss, it puts them off. So I think you do, regardless of how talented you are, you're going to have to deal with defeat. You're going to have to deal with injury. You're going to have to deal with setback. You're going to have to deal with people writing, saying things about you, and especially in the modern era, I wouldn't have liked to be growing up with the same attention and focus and social media scrutiny that goes on with players now. So there's a lot on their plate, and as well as having the physical attributes, I think you just need that mental toughness and that resilience if you're going to perform at the highest level.
Yeah, Peter, listen, absolutely fascinating stuff. Thank you for them words. And to look back at your career, it was just unbelievable. One of the best I've ever seen. And for me, as I said at the start of the show, Peter, the best player that's ever played Gaelic football, the best player I've had the pleasure of watching. I got to play with you at Ulster and with Ireland a bit, and that was an amazing time for me as well. So, Peter Kenevan, thanks so much for joining us on the DL Debate.
Thank you. Pleasure, Brian. And look forward to chatting to you later on in the year.
Good man yourself. We'll be down the trenches, Peter. Me and Andy McGinley doing the rough stuff on the radio. You'll be up on the Pampers Guy box there, but I'll see you somewhere.
If you boys could just stay off the pitch, because at times we can't see what's happening. You're running on and off. Just sit back and have a bit further.
Right, folks, that's a wrap again this week. What a brilliant show. Thanks so much to Fixture Secretary Ed Byrne for the update on the forthcoming championship. We're all looking forward to that. And of course to Peter the Great, as I say, it was an absolute pleasure to get to play with that guy and to get to know him. Fascinating character, and what a career. One of the greatest I've ever seen, and as I say, for me, the best players ever played Gaelic football. And I know that people might talk about Michael Murphy. He's still playing yet, and there's a few more chapters to write, so we'll have that debate down the line sometime. But for now, that's me signing off. Thanks to our sponsors at the 24 Hour Dry Arts Complex, Kieran Brogan. Hope yous are all well, and I'll speak to yous next week.
The DL Debate was brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex and 24 Hour Service Station, Letterkenny.